My name is John Elliott, and this is a podcast from the Insights in Jazz series, www.dropback.co.uk.
So, this week, we have another interview podcast with a very good friend of mine that I've known for over 20 years. Could you introduce yourself?
My name is Jean-Baptiste Richon. I'm French. I've played piano since the tender age of 6, but on and off in terms of how seriously I've worked at it. I started getting really interested in jazz in my late teens, early 20s. Initially more like jazz rock, sort of a fusion sort of thing, and progressively getting a bit more adventurous in terms of exploring a little bit farther back in time and, you know, listening to more of a diversity of styles.
So what would you say is currently your favorite kind of jazz to listen to and to play?
Certainly, I would say my favorite type of jazz at the moment is neo-bop. So by that I mean like modern East Coast sounds. So people like Branford Marsalis, Kenny Kirkland. I'm a big fan of Chris Potter, and I think he's got a fantastic diversity of styles. So I'm also a big fan of people like Wayne Shorter. In terms of what I play, I'm trying to play as modern as my skills will allow, but I've been doing a lot of work on standards recently. But Lego, for instance, that helped me realize, you know, how much wealth of understanding and stylistic knowledge there is in the standard repertoire. So it's been quite good to go over that.
So you're playing in, I think you're playing in a number of different bands. Can you just describe what
they are? Yeah, I'm playing with the normal rhythm section, drums, double bass, and piano, with a singer fronting it. But I'm also playing in a soul band and I suppose what you could term groove jazz and funky more type of a quartet. I mean, those are really my main projects at the moment.
And are you using this sort of Lego harmony method in each of these bands?
To a greater or lesser extent, but yes, it's obviously the most used for the standard repertoire. But what I've noticed is that the Lego concepts are very applicable to wide range of styles, of musical styles. Very useful to acquire a kind of overall view of a tune, memorize it, look at where the critical moments are in the tune. So in general, I find it enormously useful because it's almost an automatic routine now, mental routine, to listen to tunes and try to analyze them in terms of breaks and joints. It's sure. Good fun too, because it makes you realize that a lot of composers use pretty well the same tricks, and you can find them in many different styles. Yeah, I've used Conrad books quite a lot, especially initially when I got acquainted with Lego concept, and that was a really good introduction to it. I mean, obviously you initially recommended it to me, and you know, reading through it, it became fairly obvious quickly what the value of it was. I was really, really quite fascinated by the basic idea of associating patterns and of chords and, you know, structural elements of a tune with well-known tune, you know, and concentrating on how that pattern might sound in a tune. I mean, it became quite obvious to me that it was a really, really a good way of learning. I could say that your book made a difference in as much as it deepened Conrad's analysis, and, you know, more or less took over things where he left them. Also, I think that this roadmap is very useful in terms of condensing all the information you need to play the tune in a very, you know, visual fashion, and that feels a little bit like the same as the way you actually listen to the tune.
Well, I know that a lot of the ideas in my book were certainly road tested on you, because when you come around and we play two at the piano or sit around the kitchen table or whatever, I know over the couple of years that I was writing the book that it certainly was very valuable being able to run some ideas past you in that stuff.
But I mean, one thing I found really fascinating also is what it started doing to my ability to transpose songs in any key. I mean, it really does demystifies completely the idea of, you know, transposing a tune, and in a way it makes it become purely a technical problem. So you need to know where to put your hands on the keyboard, you know, you need to know your chord positions, obviously, but once you're past that hurdle, the actual memorization process and your ability to kind of move from one key to another greatly increases.
I think one of the advantages of the method is it lays out what you need to know and what you need to do, and then all that's left, when I say all that's left, but I mean all that's left is that you have to find time to do it. But at least you're not at least you're not left wondering how big is this task.
Yeah, or what direction you should be working in. That's one thing I've found in I had to face quite a lot before I read Conrad's book and yours was the in sitting at the piano or reading jazz theory books and thinking, you know, there's so much stuff that I could be working on, and I don't have a very clear idea of what I can work on that would be the, you know, would map a kind of progress path for me. You know, first, what are the first things that I should be concentrating on? Is it a question of working on different styles? Is it a question of, you know, working on technique elements? And then if that's the case, which technique elements should it be? And so on. The realization that, in fact, by, you know, just by learning to analyze tune and transposing them, you learn a lot about the tune and you also learn a lot about your playing. So it feels a really, really quite an efficient way of working. And it also makes you very curious about new tunes, which is great. And it's also, I think it also makes you, suddenly in my case, one fairly thrilling element is that suddenly you start being able to put names and some kind of pattern to sounds that you really like in a tune, but you're not quite sure why you like them. Yeah, you're just aware that you like a particular modulation or a particular interval jump at some point in the tune, but when it's seen in the context of the analysis, you know, it takes all its meaning, and it makes you able to maybe seek it somewhere else or use it in your improvisations. So
that's a good point. And one example that springs to my mind that struck me like that when I was doing the analysis was that seeing where standards modulate to key 3, for example, and it's really it's quite a special sound, and yeah, you start to notice that they do. The ones that do it all in the same place, and that sort of thing. It's quite powerful stuff.
Absolutely. And I mean, for me, one very simple thing that had eluded me from a conceptual point of view for a long time was the understanding of how you work with a major key and its minor relative, and how really they are only two sides of the same thing. Now, I think once you understand that, you know, if you look at things like, I'll say a sidewinder, for instance, a joint, that's exactly what it's about. And it's really interesting to see how, you know, how tunes use that kind of association between the two keys so much, you know, and how intimately they are linked with each other. I think once you've got a bit more of an understanding of that, it's very liberating in terms of, you know, understanding what you can do with a tune, say, during an improvisation, for instance.
I don't know if you had a chance to listen, but we had a podcast on minor harmony a few weeks ago, and that's exactly the point. So you start to learn which joins are used to get you in and out of the relative minor and all that sort of stuff. It's really, really good stuff.
Yeah.
So one question that people often want to know about this method when they come to it new is, how long does it take you when you first start before you can actually use it?
I think I would say initially there is a time, obviously, of getting used to the breaks and making sense at your own personal level of the logic behind the breaks. But once you're past that, it becomes almost like a game, really. I mean, typically, to give you an example, I would analyzing a tune might have taken me an evening, or certainly a couple of hours, thinking about it and writing it down. And I think the thing I found is, obviously, rather than listen to each chord and wonder exactly what it is, you know, you tend to say, oh yeah, that's a drop back, for instance, and it runs over X bars, say, 4 bars. You know, it's like you check with your ears that there is no specific variation, you know, or unusual variation of the form, but basically you've got it nailed, and you write the tunes as breaks, really, rather than as a sequence of chords.
That reminds me, I was recently criticized for, I wrote out the bridge for an I Got Rhythm bridge, and I made a mistake in one of the chords, and I was criticized for making a mistake. And I had to point out that the reason that I made a mistake is that once I've identified the break, I'm no longer interested in what the chords are, because I know what they are, and writing them down, well, of course you make mistakes writing them down, but that's because you're no longer focusing on every chord.
Which means, obviously, that the gig experience becomes much more relaxed and much more rewarding, I find. For one thing, you're able to communicate better with other musicians, I find, and it is more of your mental space that's available to pay attention to what they are doing, respond to that. But the other thing is that the enjoyment factor increases quite a lot, because you're not... you know, you don't panic anymore. You don't, you don't worry about where you so much about where you are in the tune. So it's quite confidence building in that respect.
Yeah, so you can enjoy rather than endure. I remember those jam sessions where, you know, you feel like you just want to die.
Yes, that's right. I mean, you come out. I had a good few of those where you come out and you feel like you've managed to survive, but. It's quite debatable whether it was actually that enjoyable.
Yeah, it is. It's exactly like language, isn't it? I mean, we talk about this a lot because you're French and I'm English, and we have lots of jokes about language. But I mean, the Lego method is just like the way that you best learn a language. You don't learn word by word; you learn phrase by phrase, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, also by association. It's quite powerful once you understand the kind of structure of a phrase.
The other thing that we've talked about is it's almost like there are dialects of Lego. So, like, when you start to look at Latin jazz, you'll see that there are still bricks, but they're not quite the same bricks that we see in swing jazz. And I think, to me, that's just like, it's like sort of like dialects in language.
Yeah, I think dialects, to me, sounds like quite a good analogy, because there are really variations on the same theme, but with kind of local local flavors. So, I mean, I'm quite a big fan of Brazilian jazz. You know, once I started reading about it and listening, I found it really interesting to see how particular the choice of the chords is in Brazilian jazz, and, you know, how they derive the sound from very specific variations on the standard breaks, but using modified chords.
Well, Jean-Bart, thank you very much for sparing some time for making this podcast.
You're welcome.
And look forward to seeing you at the keyboard again sometime soon.
Same for me.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
As an example of the oral tradition, I've tagged on to the end of this podcast a real example of a song being taught without anything written down, and just using the concepts of Lego bricks. A new song was taught in less than 5 minutes and was taken through 5 or 6 keys in a total of 15 minutes, shows how powerful this stuff is. I've condensed the whole thing into about 3.5 minutes. There's a song called I May Be Wrong.
It goes like this. It goes.
Play it again. This is a bit.
My name is John Elliott. I'm the author of Insights in Jazz, which is available from www.dropback.co.uk. If you've got any questions you'd like to ask about the podcast or the method in the book or any suggestions you'd like to make for future podcasts, then please contact me by emailing me at john@dropback.co.uk. If you found this podcast useful and you'd like to leave a tip, then you can visit the website where there's a PayPal donate button. Thanks for listening.